And a good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's the home run time, and as always, on Thursdays, we only have an hour, and that is until further notice. Every Thursday, we will always have an hour until further notice. If you remember correctly, no. Let me not start by reminding you. Let me start by welcoming you to this wonderful afternoon. The weather is perfect. It's clear. Who am I kidding? It's getting cold like by the minute here in the capital. It's kind of tricky to to tell if if April is winter or summer. Now, after after preparing today's topic, I started thinking, I think native language, translating everything that we converse, especially in the English language, because since we do most of our conversations in English, translating everything to our native languages, translating everything to our respective languages, and learning about it in those languages, I think we would make a very significant change. And why am I saying that? Oh, well, it's because I don't think we fully understand most of the things that we do, because most of it we do it in English. So you can't really grasp the full meaning and intensity of of something when it's in a different language. It's because sometimes things just don't match. Say, take the word tomorrow, for example. In the English language, they have tomorrow for the next day and yesterday for the previous day. Now, in the Bokushu language, we don't have that. We only have one word. That means for you to understand what someone means or which day, whether they mean yesterday or tomorrow, depends on the context the word is used in. And I'm told it's not just Bokushu, it's just there are a lot of Bantu languages that actually have that have that language rule, if I can call it. It's not a problem. It's a language rule, or call it a context, whatever it is that you wanna call it. But that's because we only have one word for both tomorrow and yesterday, so the context then comes into play. But in the English language, it's very easy to tell. You know that when someone used the word yesterday, they are talking about the day that have just passed. And when they are talking about when they someone say tomorrow, or then you know that that they are talking about the day that is coming. So there's one that denotes future, one denotes past. It's very explicit. Now, although now being in school, it was very common to to translate everything directly, like it's very common to hear someone say, for example, that is still building up the English vocabulary from the that speaks the Bokushu, that speaks Timbukushu. It's very common to hear English errors like I was at church tomorrow. It doesn't make it's laughable in English, but in my language that makes a lot of sense. Now the intensity, I'm bringing up the intensity and the meaning of words to grasp the full meaning of words in their original language. Take words like it's very important to grasp words, or more like to read, or more like communicate or understand words in their original language, or in your native language, not in their original language, in your native language. Now, I'm bringing that up because of one thing. When we sing the word resources a lot, and interesting enough, every time that we talk about resources, we use the word resources. Every time we use the word resources, we more often use it in a reference to extractive natural resources, aka your gold, your diamond, your lithium. But then here's the thing. These extractive natural resources, who is the target market? Who uses extractive natural resources or the or whatever byproducts that are made out of it. Who uses them? It's not monkeys. It's human beings. So the extractive natural resources, their value then are heavily dependent on the human being, on the human element. When you take the human element out of it, everything becomes useless. If we all say, you know, just say, just in a blink of an eye, all just disappeared from all this planet, apart from the planet's ecosystem is going to thrive, value is also, you know, the definition of value is also going to change. Why? It's because what's valuable to a lion? A gazelle that's dead and being eaten. That's valuable to a lion. But you and I will now attach value to everything. But now sometimes our values, now our interpretation of what is valuable or what's important tends to lean more in the direction of things rather than people. Look at the, you know, not just SADC, but look at it from a SADC, you know, Namibia SADC or Africa perspective. When you look at it from that perspective, what you are going to see is that we value things than people. Why? And it seems to me like you can see this across a social spectrum, because one, not just in a political or economic sphere, you see it in a social spectrum again. What you see that is that even, you know, your armed robbers, they are willing to kill you for the phone you have. They will just stab you multiple times and then just to get the phone. In other words, that thing you have is more important than your life, at least you know, in their interpretation of, you know, what is valuable. Again, the economy has a way of shoving you into that corner. Again, not to justify it. Now, I'm rambling all this because every time that we talk about natural resources, we forget that these natural resources are only as important as they are useful to humans. If they are not useful to humans, they, you know, they're pointless. They're useless. So every time that we talk about resources, we forget that the most valuable resources is the human resources. Yes, the oil is important. Yes, the diamonds, the gold, the uranium, lithium, you name it. They are all important, but they are only as important as they are useful to human beings. As long as there is a human being out there to consume that product, it's important. But if there is no one out there to consume it, it's absolutely useless. Now, when you look at it from that perspective, then you begin to see that the most important resources every country has is its human resources. And what's interesting is that as long as we have our diamonds, why am I using that example starting from a social perspective? Because it's very simple. You have since we have redefined the family to mean mostly nuclear, what we basically want is comfort over everything. So, which again makes a lot of economic sense, but not a lot of moral sense, obviously. Now, what you see is that you have a lot of us, no wonder we become a little too selfish. We have a lot of us that have a lot of giant houses with, you know, 5 bedrooms and 5 living rooms and 10 bathrooms. And there are only 2 people that lives there. And all at the same time, there are homeless people out there. I'm not telling you to say drag a stranger in there. Just trying to make a point here about how much we basically value things over life. Unfortunately. Now, now I'm bringing that up because yesterday, the European Parliament passed a bill that they have been, debating over for over two, three years, somewhere there, on whether the immigration laws should be relaxed or strengthened to deal with the influx of immigration. Most of the immigrants are coming from Africa. Again, this is a continent with a rich in natural resources. Again, that's because I don't think we have defined natural resources. I don't think we have defined the word resources in our own native language so that we can get a full grasp of its meaning. And because of that, every time you mention natural resources, the first thing to come in, I'm guilty of that too. Which is very simple, because English is not my native language. That's because of one main reason, in my opinion. We haven't grasped the real definition of what resources is. Because I think we would value human resources if we at least did. Or at least I can argue it from that perspective, since, you know, we haven't, as far as I know, interpreted it in any way. And I know... you are right there. Wait, immigration. Who is immigrating? So, you know, who is swimming across the gulfs of Eden from Djibouti to Libya, from Djibouti to Yemen? Well, so most of the immigrants, especially those ones that are coming from Ethiopia, are risking their lives across the Gulf of Aden, and then, you know, straight into Yemen. Now, last I checked, Yemen is a war-torn country. Now, this is the question. Yes, there are immigrants that are coming from Ethiopia. And basically, they're coming from all of Africa, all the way up to Nigeria, you name it. Now, there are these countries that are closest to Africa, like Italy, Greece, Spain. And they have, since they're all part of the EU bloc, they've always complained in the EU parliament that, we have an immigration problem. And the countries that are closest to Northern Africa, you know, it's just us that are taking all the heat when it comes to the influx of immigrants. And they have been discussing on how to solve that problem, by the way. And they've been discussing how to solve that problem. And yesterday they came to a conclusion of basically shared responsibility. Now, the EU, Al Jazeera reporting on it, stated that the EU's Home Affairs Commissioner, Ylva Johansson, said the bloc, that being the EU, will be able to better protect our external borders and the vulnerable and refugees swiftly return those not eligible to stay, and introduce a mandatory solidarity between member states. These are the EU member states that are saying that, okay, you know, we need a unanimous consensus here. The whole thing was very beautiful to watch on how they are tackling a, you know, collective problem together and try to find to solve it. Now, if there is money, the discussion basically is that if there is money that will be required into this, say, deportation and everything, how are we going to come up with it? Now, if those ones that are, you know, if they are those ones that will deserve to be given asylum, what criteria are we looking at? Because we will have to look at it together. I have to admit, every time I watched that thing, the only thing I could, the only thing I kept picturing was African leaders coming together, deciding that, you know, for an investor that's coming to on our continent to invest, say, in uranium, for example, these are the criteria that they have to meet. Whatever African country they have to go to, they will be given the same criteria. Legal, economic, they will be given the same criteria. I was picturing that in my head for some reason. Halfway through the whole thing, I thought I was dreaming. Then I realized, oh, no, I'm not. Actually, I'm awake. Maybe the cohesion is more good on paper than it is in practice, but again, they were just as divided. As you can imagine, the far right were like, nope, we want Europe for all ourselves. Like you see with asking a pan-Africanist if your country can accommodate European refugees. A hardcore right-wing pan-Africanist will tell you, nope, Africa is for Africans and Africans only. And you have those in every society. You have them in Asia, you have them in Europe, you have them everywhere. And of course, wherever there are different people, they are bound to be different opinions. It's, we are not robots. We do our own thinking. at least in things that doesn't matter most of the time. We should actually develop that in things that matter. Yeah, now, there were protesters' interruptions, like the first voting session was interrupted by protesters. In my head, I was like, well, this is looking very familiar. It turns out we were not that different after all. It was looking very familiar. Protesters showing up, interrupting the voting, and, you know, with their, you know, with their T-shirts written something like, this vote kills, vote no, something like that. And that was, that's in reference to immigrants that literally die, because when they came, you know, it's about, depending on the speed of the boat, this part of the ocean is wide, that depending on the speed of the boat, like the standard ones that you have, is most likely to take about 6 to 8 hours. So that's a very wide area. And I'm from Kavango, I should know. I'm scared to have a canoe capsize in the middle of a river that is less than a kilometer wide. Now, if you're telling me anything over a kilometer, if your canoe capsizes on there, you're tossed. And a lot of people are actually, you know, trying to look for a greener pasture. Now, I'm here talking about immigrant. And the sad thing is, I don't know how we're trying to manufacture, because of how, in my opinion, we have misdefined thereof. The word resources, by missing out the core element of the word resources, that being the human element, because of that, I think we have a serious problem in a way that we are losing the able-bodied men that would be in charge of basically running the industry that we are so hell-bent on building. AKA development is everything, is one thing that we are seeing. We want to develop, we want to be industrialized. Who is going to run the industry if we are shipping off all the human element? Because if the human resources is not in place, who is going to be there to run it? And that is a... Actually, that's a very good point to start looking at. Why am I talking about immigration issues that are taking place in eastern and most parts of northern Europe? Well, that's because immigration is also happening in SADC countries. I know. What type of immigration are you talking about? At least maybe immigration to other, maybe South Africa, maybe Angola, but not Europe, but not the Middle East, not China. Oh, yeah. There is illegal immigration taking place from our countries, including Namibia, to the overseas. That's why, last year? Yeah, that was last year. Somewhere around August, when there was this diplomatic, just a little bit of tension between the UK and Namibia. There were a lot of, undocumented Namibians that are basically, denied. It's like you applied for visa, and then you're denied, and therefore you are not, and now you can't stay in that country, therefore you have to be deported back. And over 100 and something of them were scheduled for deportation. And, there was this discussion of should they or should they not be. So these things are taking place, right? And that's like, that was the best case scenario. The worst case scenario was the one for Oman. The worst case scenario was the one for Oman. So human trafficking is being fueled by economic issues. Now, seeing that, basically the literature or research on it indicates that the further south you go of our continent, the more the economic disparity you begin to notice. So that means, although we don't have armed conflicts that are very common in most parts of this country, in most parts of this continent, there are aspects, you know, armed conflicts is not the only thing that is pushing people to move to other countries. Economic needs, economic greener pasture is one of the most, common push factors for countries that are not mired in armed conflicts like Namibia. Yeah, now, over 1,000 Namibians who relocated to the United Kingdom, and now that's coming from, last year's Namibians. Over 1,000 Namibians who relocated to the United Kingdom in search of a better life, on a tenterhook after that government put plans in motion to deport hundreds of them back. Now, with more than 230 Namibians already deported at the time, this was August last year, since the process started in December 2022, official statistics indicate the figure could jump to more than 1,200 in the coming month. That was in reference to September. Now, there was this was also one of those things, and now this is just people that have applied for a visa. Maybe there are those that went illegally, and that one was more of a clean, in comparison, more of a clean reputation in comparison to the one for Oman. Namibians living, the one for Oman was why. This, that's where the factor now of human trafficking market is now being fueled. Interesting enough, when you start talking about that human trafficking, the human trafficking example, people are just intentionally deciding to be human trafficked. In most parts of Libya, and most parts of Burkina Faso, and most parts of most parts of Yemen, the ones that are basically the southern parts of Yemen, because that's the route people are taking. And interesting enough, one thing that's very interesting about that route is that it's an old slave trade route, except the poor people that were trafficked there by the Ottomans and maybe the transatlantic slavery, those ones were forced. Today, slavery is more like it's being motivated by basically a lot of issues that being maybe in some countries like the DRC, economic armed conflicts, like maybe countries like Namibia, South Africa, Angola, economic differences. But for countries like DRC maybe, and say Libya itself, it could be that one of the motivating factor could. There are actually multiple motivating factors, but for countries like Libya, there's even more extra, that being the armed conflict. Sudan is one. Now, when you look at countries like Namibia, what you begin to see is that the whole story of the whole discussion of immigration becomes a very slick one to have. Why? It's because most of them are applying for visas and then moving, and maybe they are having their visas denied, and then they are already there, or maybe some of them their visas expiring, and there are a lot of things that are actually playing. There are a lot of things that are actually into play in there, and then they find out that now the visa is expired. Now they have to pick up and leave. But just how do you do that? Especially when the source of income you have sort of like worked on is now out and you are still hustling. Because these are the things that even those of us that move from rural to urban run into. You are in Windhoek. The $2,000 that you came with is now exhausted. You don't have, you don't know anyone to go. You don't know anyone to run to. You don't have, you wish you could just hop on a bus and go home, but you don't have that $300 to go back to Rundu. Now, picture it halfway across the world, where you need a plane ticket. It's even worse. So people have ended up, you know, homeless. Now, this, for me, it's taking place because we haven't, we haven't defined the word resources in our native language. Like, I called several of my friends, those ones that speak Thimbukushu. I'm like, okay, so what is resources in Thimbukushu? They said, what is resources? Yeah, I'm still searching. But if we look at it, resources are just available when they are being used by humans. Say, take diamonds, for example. Diamonds are used mostly the industrial application. There's industrial application, and then there's that marriage application that we all know. The industrial application being one of those, cutting discs for cutting heavy metals. Yeah, hard metals or strong metals. Let me use that word, strong metals. There are metals that you need, there are metals that you need a diamond cutting discs to cut through, otherwise that whole thing will just weigh off. And then they say, the engagement ring one. Which one of these is not used by human beings? So a diamond is only as important as the human beings that need to use it. You see mating animals the whole time. We see mating animals the whole time. Have you never seen any animals that are, most of them, like penguins, are said to be, mating in, mate for life. You see doves, I think, doing, especially birds, most birds, you see them, mating for life. Have you seen one with a tiara or a diamond chain or a diamond ring? Nope. Those things are just as important to us. That means if we want to keep their significance, we may wanna prioritize mense. But every time that we talk about natural resources, we just talk about diamond and or maybe let me just say resources in general. We only focus on the natural resources aspect of it, and our definition of that is extractives, oil, this, oil, that, oil, this. Now, how does misdefinition of resources by taking out the human element, how does it factor in immigration? It's because people are moving in search of a better opportunity. This one gentleman that explained, explained in a very interesting way about he's an American, a Mexican, immigrants to the US. Now, according to his explanation, the excuse that he keeps hearing from most Americans about when they complain about Mexican, immigrants in their country is that Mexico is not bringing their best. The question he asked them was that when we immigrated here, you think the King of England at the time brought noblemen here? No. These were people that were looking for an opportunity, for a great start, for a different environment that is not legally strangling them. They are the ones that risked their life on their boats, known as the Mayflower, by the way, filling it. What you are seeing with the people that are immigrating from Africa to most parts of Europe, getting in boats, maybe filling it at by two times or three times its capacity, which is one of the reasons why they keep dying. But it's desperation. But go back to the 1700s, those were Irish. and Polish, basically European, hopping on ships that were two times their capacity of that ship, of that ship, to try to get to modern day United States and Mexico, basically North and South America. It's just, it has been happening. It's nothing new. Again, the way I see it, the English crown was not prioritizing its people, because it was just conquering one island after another to try and expand, which they did expand, but at what expense? Their own people started running away, to the point where even places that were established as prison colonies like Australia started thriving. They had a better community than the people that sent them there. So they had to turn it into a colony, and the rest is history. Namibians fall prey to human trafficking. 26 local women lured to Oman. Now, most of the, if you look at the immigrant videos that are coming from, that are coming from Europe, be that Italy, Spain, or most of those ones that are actually close to countries like Morocco, this brutality hardcore going on in there. And we see videos of this all over. Now, most of the people that are being actually lured there by actually being pushed, this poverty and everything, there are a lot of motivating factors. Most of these people are being pushed by the economic situation, and most of them are just well-groomed young men. They are still able-bodied. These are the guys that are supposed to be building the manufacturing industries that we dream of accomplishing, or more like the manufacturing sector that we want to accomplish. The workforce is leaving, and we are so blinded by the shining diamonds that by the time we wake up from that slumber and turn around, we'll find that, okay, we have all the diamonds, we have all the industry, but the problem is we don't have anyone to run it. Why? It's because, well, we indirectly, without saying it in explicit words, shipped everyone off overseas. And I know what you say, oh, well, my uncle is there, well, he's going to come back, but, just hear me out. I have a very interesting story for you of one very wonderful lady from Ivory Coast. One very wonderful lady from Ivory Coast told a story. From Ivory Coast. She told her story on how, even if you are successful in getting a visa and moving to a different country, it's sort of like has a way of screwing with your identity as a person. It screws with your identity in a way of, in a way that, how do I put this? It screws with your identity in a, in both social and political ways. Most of the people, according to research, most of the people that actually move to different areas have to sort of like, first of all, juggle between fitting in and preserving their cultural and, and preserving their identity. In other words, say I move to China, I wouldn't want to lose my culture, so I'll want to keep it. And then on one hand, you will have to fit in because you are now in a Chinese community. So now there's this identity issues that's created. Now, she didn't put her name there, so it's good to maintain anonymity. According to that wonderful lady who basically shared her story on Quora, which is a question and answer website, and more like it's more like a discussion platform where you can go and ask scientific political discussion, where there's not really a lot of meme response going on, just a professional response. I know that, that's actually where she shared her story, and here is her story. I'm a 20 years old black woman, and my family from Ivory Coast, and I was born and raised in Europe. Right now, yes, I feel like I don't belong anywhere, despite the fact that I totally integrated in the country. So there's this issue of having trouble, because you are now raised with European norms, and every time that she came back to Ivory Coast, yes, she's black. She has all the African Ivory Coast features, but up here in the head, because you know she's mold, is like it's like a European in African camouflage. And then she went on to share her story that I feel like I'm an outcast. I feel very different from the native woman. And I feel like I feel like I will never be good enough. Even though I get no differential treatment from Europeans, deep inside of me, I know that I will never be considered a European, no African. In other words, immigrating to a different area has a way of screwing in your head where you now have these identity issues of you are not European enough to be a European, and you are not African enough to be an African. Yes, you are black, you have kinky hair, and maybe you have a wide nose, but the way that you carry yourself, the way you behave, is not unlike an ordinary African. And then you're like, okay, maybe I fit in the European community. And then you get then they realize the first thing that you're not white. So one of the, you know, part of the discussion of this immigration issues, be it immigration or human trafficking, which is basically that one really put our country on the map on that one. These are the people that were said to have been lured using employment from some from Angola and some from Namibia through South Africa, using mostly taxi drivers. And you have to understand, the economic impact is impacting everyone. You may not want to hear it, but there are those that are willing to bend their morality to a degree that you and I maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable doing. So when someone is telling you that I'm paying you $10,000, I want you to transport for me this human being from Windhoek, Namibia, to Pretoria, South Africa. And you're like, am I kidnapping them? No, I communicated with them. They are coming voluntarily with their passport. So even the immigration officials have no way of telling whether this individual is being kidnapped. That's actually the dark part of this discussion in most parts of Southern Africa, because in most parts of Yemen, they know that everyone that's hopping on this boat, is just doing so under desperate, you know, they are caught under desperate circumstances, and because of this person. Maybe they are being kidnapped because of the way that they are dressed. They've been walking for kilometers. And I mean kilometers. Hundreds and more sometimes. And some of them literally die. They are graves. They are graves of Africans. Not ancient, modern graves in Saudi Arabia. Because most of the people that are crossing over Djibouti, from Djibouti all the way through to Yemen, their final destination is usually not Yemen, because Yemen is still a war-torn country. And they just turn at an angle and straight to Saudi Arabia. Now, the Saudi border securities you'd also be equally suspicious if you were Saudi Arabia bordering a war-torn country. Saudi Arabia shares a border with Yemen. And because of that, and because Yemen is always at war, and the two, like, you know, any other neighbors, have always had a long bad blood, let's call it that. Now, because of that, there's always military armed guys that are that are patrolling the area, as you would expect. Say, during that time, and I remember that correctly, I should know, during the early, the late 90s to the early 2000s, my brain is a little foggy there, but I remember some of it. When Angola was, with the civil war in Angola that ended in 2002, was still ongoing. Did you see the type of guys that were at the border between Namibia and Angola? Where do you think I first heard the word Kambale la Komtue? Like, seriously. These were our defense force that were part. Why? It's because, it's just a national security thing. It's a national security thing. You would not send the police to be at that place because, well, that's not in their scope of work. That's an NDF work. That's why that border was lined up by military guys. So this is what Saudi Arabia is going through as we speak. And because of that, whether they are doing it intentional or not, these border guards, these border patrols, Saudi border patrols, are shooting civilians to the point where, UN has a lot of, not transparent, Human Rights Watch, yes. Human Rights Watch accused them of, Human Rights Watch accused them of killing immigrants, and that was last year around the same period that we were having our own Oman situation here, not Oman, our own UK visa restriction situation here. Saudi Arabia mass killing of migrants at Yemen border, and those are not Yemen migrants; those are African migrants, and because most of them are actually bound for Saudi Arabia. Well, I mean, who would want to go to Dubai? Come hell or high water. Saudi border guards have killed at least hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers who tried to cross the Yemen-Saudi border between March 2022 and 2023. Yep. Saudi officials are killing hundreds of women and children out of the view of the rest of the world while they spend billions on sports, on sports washing to try to, but look, just personally, I would understand. That's why I'm using the Namibia Angola example pre the ending of the Angolan civil war in 2002. Like, they have to send an army there. They're not going to send in the police who will ask first. Nope. They just have to shoot. Whether they are doing it for intentional or not, it's again becomes very debatable. Native language. If you ask me, native language is the way to go. And you are listening to The Home Run with Helm here on Eagle FM. And don't forget, the line is 083-288-401. And that's a studio. The office line is 083-288-400. Our SMS line is 1040. That will cost you $1.50 per SMS. And if you want to subscribe to our e-villager, and please do, then so that you can get news. At your fingertips every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That also, just put in mind, tomorrow is Friday. Tomorrow is Friday. So if you want to get that notification of the e-villager of, free of charge, apart from, our newspaper guy here who is actually spending sleepless nights to work, to basically put that in phone-friendly techie form. You can get that free of charge by sending an SMS of your phone number and email address to 081-200-4144. That is 081-200-4144. Let's take a short commercial break and we'll continue on the other side. Native language. Have we defined the word resources to encompass, or more like to include, Now I'm just going full political here. To include the human element. Oh, it's just an us thing, everyone else. Yeah, screw you. Let's take a short commercial break. We'll continue on the other side. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back in 11 minutes. I say goodbye. Now, the home run with Helmut on Eagle FM. Now, back to the Saudi-Yemen border where Ethiopians are dying. And the Ethiopians are not the only immigrants that are actually, feel like they have been undervalued. Just put in mind that that is minus, that number does not, that's more like a specific, call it a demography. And then there's one that is actually moving out of Africa legally. And then there are those that are actually moving, there are those that are legally, we're talking, with all the documentations. And now that will fall under the category of brain drain. So that's not the only one. So we are losing educated people via the brain drain discussion, which we had, I think, twice, once last year, and I think also once earlier this year. This is mostly the youth. This is mostly the youth. One gentleman who was kidnapped somewhere in Libya while trying to get to Europe, back in 2019 or 2018. He came from Benin State in southern Nigeria. Yeah, right. Yeah, he came from Benin State. He was kidnapped and he was branded with a hot fire iron on his face, but then fortunately he managed to escape, and then he told his story, and it was in the Time magazine, I think. Yeah, sometimes in Time magazine, sometimes between 2020, 2019, 2020, and he told that story, it's a very heartbreaking story. And the stories coming out of this whole thing is actually a very exploitive one. One told a story of how they were run into, that was in BBC or Al Jazeera, one of those. Told a story where there were about 7 boys and 2 girls. A bunch of armed guys, border guards, came to them, had them at gunpoint, had them take off their clothes, and engage in, you know what, which they did. For some reason, that's just on a whole another level of being twisted. I'm telling you, it's just, Lord have mercy. It's very safe to say, it's easy to say when you're on the tip of southern part of Africa, that no, we are very far here. That's taking place way far northeastern part of the continent. Oman. That story is painful in a way that most of the people that were caught in that smuggling, not only is the story of how this smuggling is taking place, where people are lured by being promised jobs, where the prospective employer is paying for everything, for every travel expenses, and then you now as an employee are now told that you are going to pay it back once you start working. And they are promised, exorbitant salaries. As soon as they get there, the report indicates that the compensation they are given is less than 3,000 in Namibian dollars. Now, how much can you really use 3,000 Namibian dollars here? You think it's a lot of money until you walk in one shop and see it on a pen. And then you realize, oh, hang on a second. But, one thing that most of these people, or, you know, let's call them immigrants, let's face it, because they are immigrating in search of a greener pasture. When they find themselves, when they, especially those ones that found themselves in Oman, what happened was, was something that actually very painful, because they found out very quickly that, first of all the promises that Mr. or Mrs. Employer have made has nothing to do with, it didn't have any intention of fulfilling them. And then it was alleged that as soon as you get there, they take your phone and passport. Think of the most remote area in Windhoek. In Namibia. And someone takes you there and take your phone and passport. In a country you don't know. Now, if you don't know the Middle East, it's mostly desert. This is unknown terrain, unknown place, unknown everything. So it's very easy to be exploited in any way. And when I say in any way, my dear Lord, do I mean in any way? Let me just finish the last part of that 20-year-old of this whole, apart from, the physical threats of hunger, wild animal, guys with guns that are willing to shoot you in protecting their border, guys with guns that are willing to shoot you just for fun, guys with guns that are just willing to sell you like property. I'm saying sell you like property. That's because Mr. Sunday Yabarot from Benin State explained that the jailers carved it into his face, that scar, with a fire heated knife, cutting and cauterizing it all at the same time. And why are these things taking place? By the way, this is black on black slavery. See, that's why I stopped looking at colors at some of these things. Well, back then, yeah, I did, but now I just realized that if you take a human being, give him power, he will most likely going to do the exact same thing he was complaining about the guy who was in power doing. It's just let's face it. We're all sick, but didn't mean to lash out on you. But anyway, Yabarot left Nigeria in February 2016 with a plan to head northwards and then by passage, because there are people that are literally, here we have taxi drivers, right? Truck drivers that will smuggle you. It's very difficult to call. Again, we'll have to redefine smuggling, because people are now voluntarily being smuggled. When you are showing your passport to border patrols and you are checking out everything and signing everything on your own, how is that smuggling? It is smuggling, but we will have to redefine smuggling for that to qualify as smuggling. Now, in that part of the world, they have guys that will put you in the boat and then row you across the sea for a fee, of course. And, if you don't want to walk the whole, if you don't want to cross the whole destination, the whole desert, which is at your own expense, food and water, everything you are buying. So it requires a whole budget. So there's a very interesting correlation between the immigration that's taking place in southern parts of Africa and that's taking place in mostly eastern and northern part of Africa. There's a very, except this one here is very sleek, that it's barely noticeable. It's barely noticeable. We only noticed that we are missing some of our citizens when they were, halfway across the world. being exploited. How they left, how do you even suspect as a border official? How do you suspect that this person who is signing their own border passing papers is being kidnapped? How? Nope. Let's say even at that point, if you stopped someone and asked them, say you were promised employment by some, you know, total stranger somewhere in Saudi Arabia. They will give you $10,000 in US as salary. And they send you transport money. And someone stop you at the border that know you are being kidnapped. You will think that official is that officer is nuts. But unfortunately, immigration issue here, we're acting like we don't have an immigration, but we have a huge one. I'm not talking about Namibia to Botswana, Zambia to Namibia or Zimbabwe to South Africa. This is more like an internal immigration. We're talking about one that is actually going out of the continent. Mm-hmm. So, I'm still going to maintain that we define resources in our native language so we get a full gist of what it means. Short commercial break.
Hey Namibia, introducing the stylish new Vintook beer look that now looks even better in your hands. Behold this bold design. Okay, to be 100% real with you, maybe we shouldn't have introduced the new Vintook beer look on radio, because you can't see this awesome looking pack I'm holding. With that same great Vintook beer taste you love, get one in your hands today. Vintook Lager and Vintook Non-Alcoholic are now also available in our unique 440ml bottle shape. Vintook, 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Do you have a question you want answered on air? Have a quick comment you want to share with the presenter? Eagle FM's SMS line is now open. Send your questions and thoughts to 1040. That's 1040 for only $1.50.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
And welcome back. That basically brings me to the end of my show for today. That is, you were listening to The Home Run with Helmed on Eagle FM. And until tomorrow, same time, same place here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You really, do you agree to disagree with me that we need to redefine some of these terms in our own native languages so that we get the full meaning? Because it's hard to see how that, it's easy to think that we haven't actually fully understood what they mean, because when we focus when our definition of resources is only around extractive, leaving out the human element of which the value of that extractive resources is based upon the usage of, are we sure? Are we? Now, with that, I'm just going to transfer into the hands of Dwight with a business and economic segment. And that's a business and economic segment with Dwight. And as for me, until tomorrow, same time, same place here on your favorite radio station, don't forget to subscribe to the e-villager by sending your phone number and email address to 081-200-4144. With that, do that on the other side of the commercial break. Stay tuned.
Lipurane ngeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko derewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM, the time is exactly 3 minutes past the hour of six. And as I pointed out earlier, it's business and economic segment time. And as for me, until tomorrow here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, it's a goodbye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.